Okay, Jay, so we're getting into a supercar.
Yes.
And there's a rule out there, if you've never been in one before, that the peons of the world need to know.
Shoes off.
Take shoes off.
Yes, they belong outside the car.
Is that a respect thing? Like, why do you do that?
Yes and no. But these mats are covered in plastic. And
okay.
It just creates less work.
Jason Kilmer, Sandman, the award-winning detailer, the legend himself, joining us for the DIY Detail Podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Kind of an intimate setting, a different sound. It's been polished and ceramic coated, this Ferrari Testarossa, and I guess it's another day ending in Y for you, right? Working on a pretty nice car?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Car's car.
You worked on cars at the highest level.
A lot. Yeah, I've been blessed, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What got you wanting to do this kind of work? Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of detailers dream about doing vehicles at the highest level.
Sure.
But all I can think about is how stressful it must be.
Yeah.
When this car, I don't know, between $500,000 and $1 million, like, just one mess up can be so costly.
Yeah. Yeah. So with me, it really starts from the beginning, from my birth. I was 10 weeks premature. I was born with cerebral palsy. Spent the first year in Seattle Children's Hospital. You know where that's at. You've maybe done some stories there.
From my previous life as a reporter,
newscaster.
Yeah.
I spent the first year, I had 3 intestinal surgeries. I have 25% of my large intestine left, which almost killed me on top of that. The doctors really didn't give me a chance of life. They're like, this little boy is too far gone as far as we don't know if he's even going to survive. They didn't give me a good survival rate till the age of 5. Once I got to the age of 5 and I made it way past the requirements of what the doctors thought, my mother, I was adopted, my mother had to go learn sign language because they didn't think I'd be able to speak. My arm was, until the age of 8, was actually stuck up here.
What?
Yeah, because my muscles were so tight. So if you look in a picture or a video, my arm automatically kind of comes up this way. So it's years of hard work and therapy that has brought it down to a certain point. But I was so tight, it was up here. And my hand would clench up like this. And then also, I've had 3 eye surgeries in my left eye. So it's like 2,200 in my left eye. So these obstacles I overcome. I didn't walk until the age of 4.
Until the age of four?
I crawled with one arm because my arm was so tight, I would crawl with my left arm.
It started before that with you.
Yeah, yeah. So just to be equal with kids my age, I had to be that much better.
So that's
what... I had to prove myself, yeah, just to be equal.
So is that where the drive came from?
Yeah.
Okay, but I could see that go a couple of different ways.
Yeah, yeah, like, well, it could go many different ways, absolutely.
How do you attribute the sense of, I have to just work that much harder to be equal, instead of going off a different path? It inspired you to greatness in the detailing industry, having won, Riddler, Pebble Beach. These are the highest level concourse.
Yeah.
I assume people kind of know that about Jason, but if you don't, I mean, how do you explain this to someone who, like, I took a plane trip out to Omaha.
Okay.
Doesn't know anything about detailing. Mm-hmm. No way she knows about Riddler or Pebble Beach. Mm-hmm. How do you explain to that person the level that you've taken,
it's
what you've done with paint?
Sure. It's pretty much the highest level that can be done for the most part. And I've done it. Am I the best? No. By no means am I the best. But I have certain combinations that are unique to me where I can do a lot of things within the paint and I understand the paint. And I've had to work very hard past my limitations to be really good and equal. And then at some point level, I surpass that by my own drive where I'm like, okay, we got this far. We hit a plateau. This is higher than anybody's ever thought I was going to go. So I'm just going to keep on going. And once I hit another plateau, I'm going to keep on going. And I'm going to keep on going. And I still do that to this day. Every day, you can ask my wife, I go out in the garage and I tinker with some sort of paint or some material just to try to extract more information.
Why do you have the drive to succeed? Why didn't you give up? Like, mm-hmm. was there a certain age where you feel like something clicked? Is it an experience? Like, because I'm just trying to figure out how you channel this. Like, I have to work this much harder just to be equal.
Yeah. I don't know. I remember from a young age that I had a unique sense of drive, a unique sense of who I was, a unique sense of what people thought I was, and I accepted it. The hardest part with life is acceptance, right? Accepting who you are, who God made you to be. I truly believe that, and being okay with it. And just doing the very best you can do with having the right attitude. That's a rare combination.
How do you balance the drive with acceptance?
It's tough. I mean, there are days where still now I'm like, why do I do this? Why do I do this? And really what motivates me is conversations like this, is conversations we've had in the past, is conversations that we'll continue to have of helping people be the best they can be. Because I see in people more potential than they potentially see in themselves, and I push people until they get to that point that they want to be at. And if they don't know, I give them the inspiration or say, you can do it. Let's go. I'm on the same team. Let's see how good you can be. Some people have it and some people don't, but the people that have it, that certain killer instinct, whatever you want to call it, I've seen people far succeed. And being a teacher and being a great teacher is watching your students be better than you. Is giving them the up and then giving them that and then watching them continue to grow. And I've seen a handful of people really be successful, and hopefully I had something to do with it.
I'm sure you have. You said you've trained hundreds of people at a high level. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get back to some of your early years. Yeah. Did you ever meet your parents?
No, I'm adopted. I'm the one of eight kids, all adopted. I was the only one of the eight that never met my biological parents. And for some reason, I don't know the specifics, and there was reasons why, and I just left it at that. So, you know, I don't know anything about my background. So having children is a good representation of what I would be with an able body. So it's really cool to see my son, my daughter. It's kind of spooky because they have the same drive I do. My son actually has more drive than I do. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do in their life and how far they go.
I'm a dad. You're a dad.
Yeah.
I didn't meet my biological dad till I was 18, but you can better believe I thought about it all the time, like growing up. Yeah. Who was he? You know, why wasn't he around? All these things. Yeah. And then, you had to think about that stuff.
Very rarely. It was a brief second, and then I moved on.
Okay.
I don't know. Like I said, I'm different. I knew the circumstances that I was given. I had great parents that loved me and took me in and took on my challenges with my other siblings. They had all challenges too. And I was grateful for that. So I never really looked back. I only looked forward. And it's rare to think about it. At the age of four, I knew the challenges I was going to have, and I just accepted it. And I just kept on going.
What you've done in detailing, I think, in this day and age with mm-hmm. all these new people on the internet and creating new things, like there are much bigger stars online. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's where it's like, I just want to make sure that we're communicating like what you've done on paint. Many new detailers may not even know your name.
Yeah.
And but you have so much to teach, and that's why I'm excited to learn more and some more polishing videos. But I'm just wondering, like, what would you want to know if you were just starting out in detailing?
Well,
because I don't know that they would necessarily want to do what you've done, even if they think they do.
A lot of people think they do, and you know, we spend an hour or two really honing in on a small spot. I'm like, okay, now do that in a week to a whole car. And they're like, yeah, well, I'm okay. It's not what I do, what I've done is not meant for everybody. And I've paid the price. You talk to anybody that's been successful, that have taken things to different levels and tried different things, there's a price. There's a price for, you know, for taking it to a level, and there's a price for, you know, not taking it and taking the easy road out. So there's
What's the price?
The price is relationships, family time, hard on your body, hard on your brain, mentally challenging, emotionally challenging on all assets. You know, you take something to a certain level, you're going to pay the price regardless.
There's a part of a lot of details out there. They want to at least know they can do that.
Yeah.
They want to be able to be the total hero. But of course, going after that, you can be the zero real quick.
You can be the zero real quick. It's you got two choices. You can be the hero zero, and you have to
Wait, there's no in between?
Not really. It's, you know, and when I was younger, I wanted to be the hero. As I got older and more mature, right, you mature, hopefully, you don't want to be the zero, and you're okay with not being the hero all the time. And there's a balancing act. I wish I would have learned that balancing act in my younger years, because there's a lot of things that I missed, a lot of opportunities money-wise that I missed because I was chasing some elusive thing that's perfection. And perfection is not attainable. Perfection is a pursuit of getting better and better and better. And it got to be a point where my mentors, they were calling me and asking me questions. And that's kind of a spooky thing when the people that you have looked up to your whole career and before that, looking in magazines when I was younger, now these are people that are friends of mine and they're asking me questions. When I was a teenager, they were building cars. So I made a master list when I started making sanding blocks. Back in 2013, there was 10 people on the list. Last year, I sent the last set to the person that was on that list.
And who was on that list? What was that list? What was the criteria?
The criteria was the best custom painters in the country and essentially in the world. But my criteria was I did not want to give them a set of sanding blocks. I wanted them to come to approach me. And I finally hit that last list last year.
So you sand paint. I'm always thinking of the outsider who doesn't know this world like even I do, let alone you. What is a custom sanding block that you make? What's the significance of that? Why is that something people are coming after? It's a craftsman thing,
it's
right?
It's a handmade thing by myself.
But we don't understand that. So tell me what the significance of your custom sanding blocks are.
Okay, so we'll make it very simplistic. So we're polishing, we're clinging, even in your house, shapes, sizes. So I match whatever I'm doing, sanding block to a buffing pad, to a towel, to a coating applicator, to whatever it is, clinging, polishing, protecting. Everything has a shape. I make small things fit that shape.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So if you're looking at a basketball, how would I clean? How would I protect? How would I wash it? How would I coat it? How would I approach the basketball?
So for circular surface, like for round surfaces, you have certain sanding blocks that work.
Yeah, that flex, that take the curvature of the basketball.
Oh, they flex more versus being hard.
Yeah.
And when would you use a harder sanding block?
A harder sanding block is to getting the surface essentially flatter. I'm planing the surface like woodworking. You know, you're taking a file and you're hand planing the wood, right? It's kind of old craftsman type of mentality where it's handmade. It's hand, like this upholstery. This leather was hand-stitched by someone in Italy.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said. Look at these wrinkles right here. That's factory wrinkles. Does it look perfect? No, but it was hand done. How did that person craft that? How did they make that? That's how my brain works. As I go into, even when I'm in an airplane, I'm like, how did they make that part? You look at the seats. That's a, when your seats are bolted into the airplane, it's a machined piece of aircraft billet aluminum. There's a lot of thought process in making that piece. So I think at it from a different level. I think about it very complicated, but it's a very simple process.
For those who have sanded or haven't sanded, you know, you once told me that you have a healthy level of fear mm-hmm. every time you put sandpaper to paint. Mm-hmm. Why do you have that fear? Is there a memory or a big whoopsie that you'd be willing to share that might add a level of humility to other folks out there who think about wanting to take this to the high level?
I've made a couple of mistakes where they've cost me tens of thousands of dollars, but we've tried to make it right. I'm not perfect. I'm not a robot. This is a craft that we're trying to do, and you're trying to do it at a certain height level in a certain amount of time. And with those aspects made and being so critical, you make mistakes. It's part of the human error. So, you know, being hard on yourself, but also being gracious with yourself, I think is a very, very important aspect to have.
We're detailers, but we're humans too.
We're humans, yeah.
What role has your faith played in helping you overcome obstacles? And I'm looking at this. This is bigger than cleaning cars, shining them up, making paint win awards. What role has your faith played in helping you?
Everything. My faith is everything because at the end of the day, it's a relationship. It's people. It's podcasts. It's what we're talking about now. How you react to a certain situation or a person shows the person you are inside. So if you're gracious and thankful, and you know we say attitude of gratitude, I got that from somewhere, but it's true. If you have an attitude of thankfulness, whether you agree with something or disagree, it takes that bitterness and takes that out of the equation, at least for you. I can't take the bitterness or dissension out of somebody else, but if I take it out from me, that it frees me. It frees me from, you know, and that doesn't mean, you know, be lazy, be disrespectful. That doesn't mean that. That doesn't give me the free pass card to do that. What that does is that allows me to be free that, you know what, I am human. I do make a lot of mistakes. I have made a lot of mistakes, but I've tried to make my wrongs right and do the right thing.
You mentioned water off a duck's back earlier.
Yeah.
And I think you've had to work with so many different personalities over the years. You swoop into the DIY Detail Garage for a couple days.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you do this to different people, with different people, training, working on high-level cars.
Different situations.
Different egos. You must have seen so much.
I have.
So what advice do you have for people out there watching who may be in their own lives, in their own worlds, but like just dealing with all the different personalities you've worked with? Because I see it how you... I can tell how you get along with folks, and I feel like you're very good at that.
I read the room, I read the situation. I'm like, how can I help? I don't want to be there. I'm not coming in here to be the hero. I'm coming in here to help. And with leadership, I think good leadership is someone that leads by example, that helps no matter what it is. You know, if that was, we're going to go, you know, ceramic gloss the toilet. All right, let's do it. Like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it with zeal and the best that I can do. And I want everyone to be happy and successful. And it doesn't matter if I'm under the car, on top of the car, being the limelight of the show. In fact, I don't like being the spotlight. I like being the person behind the scenes. In fact, that's where I'm most happy, is being the person behind the scenes.
Why is that?
I don't know. I just...
Because a lot of people may think they want to be the star, and it...
No, not me.
Is it all that is cracked up
to
me sometimes?
No, I mean, you know, do I have a presence on social media? Yes. But really, that was everybody else giving me, you know, praise or opportunity. I'm not one that always likes to pound my chest. I like to lead by example. I like to help people out, but I like to give people lots of credit where credit's due. Are there some things in the world and social media that irritate me? Yeah, there is. The whole word expert, I think, is taken way out of context. I don't even know what an expert is. What is good and what is bad? I don't know if there's a definition. Have I seen people that are good in their craft? Absolutely. Am I the best? Absolutely not. I look at my mentors that have helped me and taught me and got me to the path. And there's been a couple of them that really have put in a lot of time and effort to allow me to be me, make mistakes. But that's part of the growing process in whatever you do.
I was thinking about detailers out there who want to learn something from you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What ought they know about OEM paint, or what level services should they provide? Should they ever put sandpaper to paint? You know, should they go to a training? Like, what's something they can do today or tomorrow to, like, just get better at polishing?
Try it all. See what you like. See what you don't like. Abraham Lincoln had a saying, I learned from everybody.
Yes.
Even if it's not what to do or not what to do or what to do. There's some things that I disagree with. That's fine. I'm not going to go blasting someone because of it. Unless you direct it towards my family, then you better watch out. But if it's not directed towards my family, I've dealt with a lot harder things in my life. So does it dig at me a little bit? Yeah, it gives me a little bit of dig, but I'm okay with it because I know I'm doing it for, you know, some good intentions and some good reasons, and I'm just trying to help people out.
But you mentioned try everything. So just get experience. Polishing, sanding, like,
yeah.
Just get experience.
Just try it all. Try machines. Try it all so you know, I don't really like this. That's great. Some people like Flexus. Some people like Rupes. Some people don't like either. Some people like rotary. Some people like DA. Just pick something and become really good at the craft or the tool. Know everything what it does and doesn't do and everything in between. And then you are a full expert, or you become more of an expert over time. It takes time. How much time and effort you want to put in is up to you. But if you spend... What's the quote going around or on social media?
10,000 hours?
Or? No, it's 18 minutes a day. If you spend 18 minutes a day in some discipline, you'll become better than 95% of the population a year later.
So 18 minutes a day?
18 minutes a day.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah. So if you spend 18 minutes a day on a craft or a discipline, you're going to be that much better in a year, but you have to stick with it. And that's not the world we live in now.
People assume that those at the highest levels, maybe they worked really hard at one point and now they're at a certain level. The fact that you told me you're going into your garage every night, mm-hmm. trying stuff, mm-hmm. practicing your craft, mm-hmm. like a professional athlete, mm-hmm. would, I think that might surprise mm-hmm. folks out there.
I mean,
is it passion? Is it just, you know, you've chosen this life and you better damn well be good at it? Is it curiosity? Like, what gets you into that garage every night?
It's all the above. But really, it's I'm my worst critic. And I've never polished a perfect panel. I've never sanded a perfect panel. I've never cleaned a perfect panel. So that my level of perfection has grown over time. Hopefully it's gone, you know, linear, vertical. I'm still not happy with anything I've ever done. Ever in my entire life. There's always an improvement. There's always a pro and there's always a con. And you have to be okay with that, but it's the pursuit of perfection. I know I'll never on this side of heaven, I'll never see perfection. But it's trying to be the constant pursuit for me.
You almost weren't even here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty crazy, huh? If you really think about it, you know, and that's the level of torment that I feel inside me that I deal with on a daily basis. Because you have that part of me, and then you have the constant professional that everybody expects me to be and wants me to be, and I try to be. So there's this pull that I have to deal with, you know, and you know, then my family. There's that pull too, because how I am and what I do in my craft, I'm that way all the time. I'm just go, 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 go. But a person that's go, 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 go has their limitations and has their blow ups and blowouts and wear downs. And who sees that? Your family does.
And they're so, the ones who deserve at least.
They deserve the most. And so that's getting older. That is my new passion and my new pursuit, is putting as much drive and work and effort into my family and my personal life and looking after me now instead of looking after everybody else. So it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, but you said earlier that you want to help people.
I do.
You didn't say my goal is to make X amount of money or to get this kind of fame. And
nope.
And I think having a purpose is a really important thing.
Purpose is everything. Because if you don't have a purpose, why are you doing what you're doing? Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, if you want to make money and that's your drive, that's a purpose. But money doesn't solve everything. You know, and cars and boats and all this, it doesn't really solve everything. Yeah, you may have it. Great, that's fine. And that may be your pursuit. But why are you doing it? That's the real root of the thing. And a lot of people don't even know why they do what they do. They haven't figured out that true purpose and why they're doing what they're doing. Not that it's good or bad. Just what is your reason for doing what you're doing? And most people give you a generic answer, you know, but it's not, I'm like, there's more to it than that. Because I can see through people, because I've had to read people my entire life.
Why?
Because they don't believe in me. They don't think I could do it. So you have that element. You know, it's like our waiter this morning. I read him like a book. You know, I made him smile right off the bat, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. See how I changed that course?
Well, but what did I say to you at breakfast this morning? I said, people underestimate you, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
And it wasn't because I know your story with, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. you know, your cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just, you're kind of quiet and you kind of read people. And I'm like, but mm-hmm. I see the decisiveness with which you make decisions. Yeah. And like your preferences are firm, but not like
overbearing.
Yeah. But it's like, but there's a confidence in the way you make decisions. I'm like, people underestimate you, don't they?
They
you
do.
Know, because you're out of your element. Yeah. I'm not watching you. I didn't just hire you to come into my show car.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, I know your background, but it's like, I just feel like we're just chatting as guys. Yeah.
There's so much more to me than that. So, you know, and that's the thing. The detailing is just a small segment of what I've seen and what I'm capable of doing. Like, there's way more than Jason Kilmer than just paint. Way more. I've had hours and hours of discussions of, you know, we've had discussions just about life in general, you know, and about how do I navigate this or how do I navigate that? And it's breaking down to a simplistic level and saying, okay, where are you at? Where do you want to go? Okay, this is what I see. What do you see? And then navigating that to get to that point. It's much how we detail a car. We break it down into very small, bite-sized, simplistic things.
Well, I think detailing a car is, in some ways, you know, order from chaos, and mm-hmm. it's taking something dirty and making it clean, and it's all these different things. I was just thinking of how much money this car is worth. Do you have advice for people on dealing with incredibly wealthy folks who may own cars like this. Like, let's say someone I want to be like Jason. Mm-hmm. I want to only detail high-end cars. I want to polish and coat them, whatever they want to do. How do you deal with customers like this? Because I heard Todd Helm from Rupes once say, you kind of got to have a little bravado in working with that. I went to a Rupes training way back in the day when I first started out. I remember him saying, you got to have a little swagger to you. That tends to help with customers like this. But, you know,
I'm the opposite.
Okay, how do you recommend folks talk to folks who have supercars?
I just say, well, you contacted me. I didn't contact you. What do you have a problem? What is that? They're like, well, I want you to do this. I want you to do what you do. I'm like, okay, that's all I need to say. Then I do what I do, and they're like, well, what do you think about this? I'm like, we can go down that road, but it's a disaster. Or I just say, no, we're not going down that road. I know what you're trying to accomplish, but these are the things, and I don't want to do that.
Well, I mean, for folks who have way less experience than you, mm-hmm. they may be in a fake it till they make it mode, or they may know a little bit about detailing, but maybe they've never detailed a Ferrari before. Like, how do you handle those customers? Because I've had a couple of them where the Ferrari guy was the cheapest one I ever dealt with, and he told me he had a guy in California who did it for $50.
That's fine. Then let him do it for $50. You have to be okay with saying no. And I've said no to very, very wealthy people. You know, most of the stuff I've done is the one percenters. And I'm like, okay. You know, I let them talk, and I let them, you know, say what they want to say. And I say yes or no, but it's under my terms. And the reason why it's under my terms is because at the end of the day, no matter the value of the car, no matter the person, there's still a person and it's still a car. So regardless if we do the job or don't do the job, it's still a car and it's still a person. If you treat it as such, you do the best job you can do, over-deliver and under-promise is what I can say. If you're not confident on pulling something off or you're uncomfortable with something, don't do it. But at some point in time, if you want to climb the ladder and get better, you have to take calculated risks. And sometimes when you take calculated risks, you're going to go over the edge, right? You're going to do something that, oh man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. But so, I mean, it's this give and take, right? It's this give and take of, you know, no one to hold them and no one to fold them. No one to run and no one to walk away, as old Kenny Rogers says, the gambler.
I think it's so funny because I think Ivan and you both have so much experience. Mm-hmm. Ivan's one of his unique gifts is distilling it all into a very simple and safe method to get perfectly acceptable all the way to, I think, great results, right? And I think you express the nuance and the on the other hands and the, well, it could go this way. Like, they're both true at once, right?
Yeah.
And I think the beauty of Ivan's system is he's trying to help people avoid the big whoopsies. Mm-hmm. And still get results, but you just had to take things to such a greater level that you've lived in that probably exhilarating, thrilling, risky
business. Yeah, sanding wasn't really popular in detailing. I pretty much made it popular. That's where we're at right now, and everybody wants to sand a car, and you know I take you know some risk and responsibility for that, but I mean I'm the one that really pushed that envelope, and you know then we got the DA camp versus hand sanding camp, and what's funny,
dual action sanding.
Yeah, dual action sanding. What's funny about that is the guys at dual action sand,
which they put on a foam interface
Those guys that do that still have my block. So, you know, it's just both disciplines, right? It's being disciplined enough, but being open enough to say, hey, if your way is better, let's go that route. or if your side looks better than my side, I'm going to humble myself and say, you know what? I got beat. That does look better.
You prefer hand sanding?
I prefer hand sanding because I have every pass I make, I have control. When you use a machine of any sort, of any tool, of it could be a drill. You're drilling a hole into the wall. There's some level of time in between pulling the trigger that you don't have full control. With hand sanding, I have control of everything. That sanding block by itself doesn't do anything. I have to actually move it.
Yeah, it is sort of terrifying. There's a moment between when you pull the trigger.
Yeah.
And I think I used like an 8mm stroke or something, super not aggressive with an interface pad and my sanding disc. I was just like, I know this is working and it's giving me a white haze. And we don't recommend this at DIY Detail to sand your OEM clear coat. But it always felt, there was an element of it that felt somewhere between me and the result.
Oh,
was
nerve-wracking.
Something that I didn't have full control over. Yeah. So I could get why the hand sanding makes it. So if folks want to learn more about your hand sanding blocks, they want to learn more about you, you're on Instagram, Jason Kilmer.
Pretty much Instagram is the pretty much only handle I do. I have a TikTok and Facebook, but Instagram is really the way to get a hold of me, honestly.
So folks weren't sanding paint really before you?
Pretty much, no. And I got some flack and some negative feedback for it, but I knew it worked for what I needed it to do.
Which is?
Get out scratches pretty effectively.
And then compound those scratches out?
But that was also when we had more factory clear to work with. Now,
how long ago was that?
I would say it's really changed on an OEM level in the last 5 years.
Just the last 5 years, the clear coat's gotten that much thinner.
Yeah.
So now you would say don't.
I'd say be very cautious. Very, very cautious. And you know, I've done it to some detailers that have a skill set that I've either taught or I know. I would say, yeah, you can be careful. If you don't have a level of expertise or you're not comfortable, please don't do it. Just do it on a junkyard panel and be very cautious, because all it takes is one wrong move and then you're going to the body shop. And that's a terrible feeling to have. You have that, your stomach is, or your heart is in your stomach. Feeling, and that's not a fun feeling. I don't know if you've ever had that, but
I've burned through clear.
Okay.
But it was in, you know, rotary or dual action polishing to remove sand scratches. Yeah. So maybe I actually went through the clear with the sanding and I didn't know.
You probably did. Yeah. Probably did. And it's just, you know, it's, you know, every step counts and every section is important. Make every pass count. I mean, that could even be rinseless washing. Make every movement with that sponge or that wash pad count.
So make, as opposed to a mindless thing, you want to be fully present with every movement and make it count?
Yeah, because, you know, my good friend David Patterson, we both know, there's a book, I believe it's called E-Myth. The, you know, he says it often in trainings, is that conscious effort becomes subconscious. You don't even think about it. I can move a sanding block and sandpaper, a buffer, and not even look. I could be looking away and I know pretty much where I'm going to be at, because that conscious effort has put so much effort into it, it's becoming subconscious. You know, you drive a car, do you think about it? No, you just drive a car. But at some point in level, when you started learning to drive a car, you had to really think and pay attention.
So you're just saying it's not a bad idea for everyone to just be conscious of every movement and every pass they make.
Yeah.
Whether they're washing, decontaminating, polishing, anything.
Yeah, because in any one of those disciplines, if you pick up a chunk of dirt, right, if you wash something or rinses wash something and that sponge or mitt drops on the ground, or you pick up a piece of debris and now you're carrying it around with you in your media, you're going to have some problems.
I like that. It's we teach a system that works great products. Hey, it's the DIY Detail Podcast.
Yeah.
I got to plug my mouth up. But having a responsibility, having an awareness around every movement and just knowing you're the one
controlling
with,
it.
The pad, polish,
sponge,
whatever in your hand. So just take that responsibility and remember that, like,
Yeah.
You get to use your judgment in the moment.
And if you're a professional or want to be, you know, you're getting to that level. I'm not talking about weekend warriors that do their own cars. I mean, that's great. But you're working on someone else's car. And would you want the roles reversed? Meaning that if that person worked on your car, you want them to take as much care as possible as you like that car. You don't, nobody wants to make mistakes or mess up, but you know, things happen. It's just, it's a systematic approach for something that's very, very simple. You know, there's a pro and con for everything. And if you do something aggressive, there is a pro and con to that. You know, there's a pro and con to everything you do in life.
You ever use a magic eraser on interiors?
Oh, yeah. Do I recommend it? No.
No, because there's a huge con. You're literally removing the coating, aren't you, on the vinyl and the leather?
But what if that's the only way to go about it? And you know, I just removed a pin mark from my wife's car. My daughter got a pin mark on the vinyl. And I'm like, well, here we go. So I tried something. I think I used a Auto Scrub Ninja pad, which are great pads. And I took some cleaner. I don't even know what it was. And I took some cleaner, and it could have been even a rinseless wash. Maybe it was yours. I don't know.
Who knows?
And I
rubbed it. It worked.
And it worked, and I'm like, oh, man. Well, I got that magic eraser, which is essentially sandpaper. And I'm like, well, here goes nothing. And I just did it lightly, and I looked at it. And when you're doing that, you just don't want to scrub right away. Because if it comes off, you're like, oh, man. Especially if it's a customer's car. But I just did a couple passes. I'm like, okay, I can put a little more oomph behind this. And I got most of it out. And actually, my wife is like, hey, I got that pin mark out. I'm like, what'd you do? I don't remember what she did, but she got it out. And I was like, good.
Wait, so you took it to a certain level and then she took it further?
Yeah, she took it further.
So you had the magic eraser and you just like really gentle and you left it where you thought was responsible. And then she's like, oh, let me try it. She probably went real hard.
I think she took like a Scotch-Brite pad or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, she got it off and it was pretty crazy. But yeah, you know, just have fun with it, you know. And if it's a business, sometimes the fun's not in it. You know, the stress comes, the cars, the people, the interactions, and it's work. At the end of the day, it's still work. And don't let work be the main focus of your entire life, because there's more to life than work. It could be a passion, and that's great. You want to be good at your craft and what you do. No one wants to go to work and say, I just want to be a real lazy, crappy person. I don't think people generally want to do that, but there are circumstances in their life or their job or work where things just aren't good, not fun. And it's that constant attitude of, you know what? It may be a real poor situation. It may be really bad. It may be really negative. But I'm just going to try to be as positive as I can and just keep on moving on one foot at a time, one step at a time. Don't look at the journey ahead of you. Look just right in front of you.
Well, I've heard someone else say that before. I asked Mike Phillips about what it was like when he lost his leg in the boating accident. Yeah. Mike Phillips is a prominent detailer, one of the legends. And if you don't know who he is, he's out there. He's trained. He's been with a lot of companies. But if you don't know who Mike Phillips is, where have you been? But he said in this interview I did with him on the Hawk Pro Detailing YouTube channel, he said, I don't look backwards. I just look forwards. And I thought that, what?
Yeah.
Is he missing something? Is there some component of life
missing
that he's...
missing his leg, but yeah. Oh. No pun intended, but yeah.
I can't make that joke.
So. I can, though. Okay. But yeah, I know.
Okay. You guys are old.
You know, you just got to... You can't look back. There's some things where you wish you might have changed, but in a situation like that, I can't change what I my physical capabilities. Can't change it. And I wouldn't want to change it, because if I changed, if for some reason God healed me, right? And all of a sudden I wake up and I got two arms, two eyes, two legs, whatever works and what doesn't work, and I'm fully functional, I wouldn't be the person who I am. That the disability has given me an ability to do what I do and share what I do at a greater level. So if I took that away, I'm taking away the story that was written for me before I was even born. So, yeah, I like me. Is it frustrating sometimes? Is it hard? Yeah. But that's who I am. So I just deal with it.
Well, I hope your story's been inspiring. It's getting hot and stuffy inside
the
Ferrari.
It is getting warm in here.
And what is that noise, by the way, for 45 minutes? There's like a little noise.
Could be the clock.
Okay.
Could be the clock, yeah, because it's analog, old school clock. See, it's still moving.
It's still moving.
Yep, so that's what it is.
All right. We'll show some B-roll of that because that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Jason, appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And we have more videos with Jason. It is getting hot and stuffy in here. I'm getting a little dizzy.
Yeah.
But you can find those videos somewhere right here. This is where you point and say, oh, that.
Right there?
Right in the center.
Oh, right there.
Right there.